Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Woodman Corner, the West Bromwich Albion podcast that thinks the Championship is the place to be. I am Graham Brown and I am joined by my regular Joe Chapman. How are you doing, mate?
I'm well, mate, considering. It's obviously been a really rubbish 24 hours for everybody concerned with Albion. It was the inevitable that maybe even as early as Saturday we actually thought it was something that could be reversible, but really it's a real bang down to earth. And
so yeah, so obviously this is the first podcast since Albion's relegation was confirmed. We'll talk about Saturday in a minute, but go on, tell us, how did you spend the Southampton Swansea game? What was it like for you?
Well, I was working, so I kind of had the game on in the background. It was incredible, actually, the emotions you go through in a match such as that when your team's not involved.
Yeah.
And I never again want to have to sit through something and hope for a draw.
It was interesting.
It's the most horrible outcome to have to hope for.
The whole kind of accountability thing, really. It's like generally, you know, you've got some degree of involvement. If you're at a game, you know, you're sort of part of in terms of cheering your team on, and you have a kind of ownership of your team. So if they win and lose and blah blah blah, they're yours. Whereas it's such a weird thing that you're so involved in a game in which you have no accountability, no real investment in either team. It's an interesting thing, and I think I don't have to do that again very often.
Did you watch the game? Did you see it?
No. I had it kind of following me around the house. I listened to it on the radio, but no, purposely didn't really want to watch it.
No, well, I spotted a lot of people on Twitter talking about how they couldn't sit and watch it, and no. I kind of realised after a while I didn't really want to be watching it. And in a weird way, I couldn't take my eyes off it. It was kind of it was like pinball. In both penalty areas, and you're like, please, somebody just lump it back into the centre circle. Yeah, and that was the gist of the game for 90 minutes. And it was actually, and Albion fans might agree with me and others may not, but it was a sense of relief when Gabbiadini scored, because you thought, well, to yourself, there's 20 minutes or so to go. We can now focus all our desire and on one team,
on one goal. Yeah, because you didn't know what you were kind of hoping for. You know, you're like, hoping for 0-0 and hoping for 2-2 are two very different things, aren't they?
Yes, yeah, so it was 65-70 minutes of pure anxiety, tension, and it was almost like that Gabbiadini goal, which ultimately relegated. It was almost like just being put out of your misery.
Yeah. So anyway, that happened a couple of days before another thing happened. God, how did you find the Spurs experience?
It was incredible. It was obviously on the back of I was in the fan zone before the game. It was my day off, so I decided to wander down to the Hawthorns as a fan in the Smethwick end, and watching the it was obviously a glorious day. It's been a glorious week weather-wise. It was a fabulous day for watching sport and drinking copious amounts of lager. And in the fan zone, a couple of hours before the game, was catching up with a few mates, and the Palace game on, of course, and I got to the fan zone just before half time, and it was 1-0 to Stoke. I thought, for God's sake, come on Palace, come on Roy, we need a favour. And Palace play, to be fair, for a team that I've got nothing to play for. Palace, they've got a very talented squad, but they were excellent in the second half and did us a huge favour. And when and Van Aanholt goal went in, it was like an Albion goal had been scored in the fan zone, the cheering and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then of course you then have to turn your attentions to the Albion game itself, and I feared that it might fall flat on its backside, really. You thought, well, maybe Spurs, who have got so much to play for still, need to turn up and might roll us over 2-3-0. And the longer that the game went on, and Spurs didn't really ever look like scoring. Sounds odd, but
nah.
And then you thought, oh, do you know what? This is going to be even more anticlimactic because it's 0-0 and it's almost, we're too close to...
Do you know, I didn't think that. I mean, I'm a really kind of pessimistic Albion fan. But for some reason, it changes when it's sunny. A lot of my best memories of Albion have got is when it's sunny. It always seems to me that when the sun comes out and Albion play at the Hawthorns, they tend to
win. We don't have very good winters, do we?
No, exactly.
December, January are notorious, Albion, especially in the Premier League era, are notorious for not playing very well.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, if there's big puddles and that, I basically know we're going to lose.
You look at back, it's actually a very interesting point you made. Roberto Di Matteo got sacked in the winter, or you know, kind of coming into the spring. Steve Clarke got sacked in December. Alan Irving got sacked in December. All these managers that have come and gone.
The great moments of the Hawthorns, a lot of them are around the playoffs. You know, you've got the Great Escape, blah blah blah. There's loads of just
around the Villa, beating the Villa in 2011. Yeah,
Great loads escape, of things happen when that. So it's always a good feel for it. And it's unlikely, but throughout the whole game, I thought we're going to win this. Maybe if you told me 90 minutes, I might not have thought it. But I did think I just thought it was going
to
happen.
It was a great way to sign off. Obviously, it hasn't worked out for us, but it was a great way to sign off at the Hawthorns for a season.
Yeah,
and. Delighted for Darren Moore.
Yes,
he was ice cool as well. He's just the calmest bloke in the ground.
Well, let's spend no longer than 60 seconds on this point because we ask it about it every week. But have you changed your mind? Should Darren Moore be the next Albion manager / head coach? Quickly?
Oh, it's becoming a very very unpopular opinion. But for the course of 46 matches, I agree. On one hand, I don't want to sound like I'm being the total kind of the polar right down the middle. And I haven't got an opinion. It's becoming increasingly difficult to look anywhere else. I accept that, and I'm not sure over 46 games, Darren Moore, out of a totally different squad, it's going to be a totally different squad.
Yeah,
it's going to be. Where are we supposed to be next season? I don't know. I don't know what's expected of us.
Well, I flip flopped a little bit more than you. So my take is, if I look at the candidates who could potentially take over Albion, I can only name two, maybe three, that I'd now want more than Darren Moore. I'd probably just on balance want Dean Smith more. I'd probably just on balance want Nigel Pearson more. And I think I might prefer Steve Clarke. But I prefer Darren Moore to a lot of the people on that list now. Michael Appleton, probably Chris Wilder.
Shakespeare.
Yeah, I prefer Moore to all of it. And I don't want to go on a bit for ages, but the other thing I think is he might fit into the structure better than a lot of those players. I think those... I would imagine Jenkins is going to want to get control over recruitment again. I think Moore would fit well into that. So I mean, in terms of that, you know, overseeing a transition, I think he needs an experienced person backing him up, because I think the problem is, what happens when he loses three games? How does he respond to that? He just doesn't have that in his locker, so he kind of needs that. But I mean, certainly, actually, as a manager that brings a squad together quickly, that has to be changed around quickly, he might be the right person.
Well, I take your point absolutely about the backroom staff being actually there on the touchline alongside him is going to be vital.
Yeah.
As regards to recruitment, it's obviously going to be interesting to see what becomes of Terra Neo and the exact role he has to play and how much influence he has.
Realistically, whoever they bring in can't be that involved with recruitment, because you know recruitment is a long play. And,
that's why Smith would fit the bill, because of his role at Brentford. And,
yeah,
he's, you know, he's in a very similar role there.
So anyway, obviously, Woodman Corner extends its massive thanks to Darren Moore, and we put out our shout for him to be knighted, which we think should happen immediately. While we're on it, we should probably return to our regular feature, everything we love about Alan Pardew.
Well.
Okay, more of that next week. Right, so today what we're here for is we're down now, so it's time to start to assign blame. So what we've done is Joe and I have gone away.
My favourite. Yeah.
Yes, we've looked at the various contributory factors to Albion's season, and we're going to rank them in. We've got our own rankings in terms of where they've come down. So, I'll go first, and then Joe can do his. So it's along eight lines. So this is mine. Number one, Alan Pardew. Number two, Williams and Goodman. Number three, Guang Chou Lai. Number four, the players. Number five, Mark Jenkins. Number six, Anthony Pulis. Number seven, Nick Hammond. And number eight, the fans. So there are eight areas. That's my list. I have Pardew at the top. I've got Pulis near the bottom. I've got the players in the middle. Go on, Joe, what's
your
list?
Well, I've ever so slightly changed mine up. So from one to eight, I've gone with John Williams and Martin Goodman as number one.
Okay.
I've gone with Mark Jenkins is number two.
Right.
I've got Alan Pardew at three, Tony Pulis at four, the players at five, Nick Hammond at six, Gushan Light at seven, and the fans at eight. And I'm still questioning why we've even got the fans on this list.
Yeah, I think I talked about this on Twitter before.
Disclaimer: Graham Brown, notorious Graham Brown, asked me to add that.
Yeah, someone raised it before, so I thought we'd throw it in there. But when I thought about it, I actually think the fans might have had a slight part to play. We'll come back to talk about this in a bit, but I don't think it was a massive kind of contributory factor. Well, let's go through this. So we'll take my list and we'll kind of debate. So
you can't see this, guys, but Graham Brown has got a fantastically detailed sheet here.
Yeah, I like order.
Yeah, which incidentally is not something Albion have been accustomed to this season.
No. So it's interesting. So what's clear, like from how we've put this together, is that you give greater you apportion greater blame to the most senior decision makers in the club. So, I mean, I think it's interesting that. I mean, part of the reason why Jenkins is quite so low for me is that, well, we'll get into this, but he wasn't here for a long part of this season. But I think fundamentally, I can see your point. But let's go. Well, we'll take my list.
Yes.
So Alan Pardew. So I would say, if I was drawing a pie chart of the reasons Albion got relegated, I think Alan Pardew would account for 3/4 of that pie chart. And I'll tell you why, and I probably say this sort of thing every week, but I think not only would most football managers have kept Albion up this season, I'd contest most humans would have kept Albion up this season. I think if you look, the stat now says, does the stat say that Albion, even if you take in Tony Pulis's awful time, the 19 games that if you take out the 19 games that Pardew managed Albion this year, they'd be in the top 10.
Mm.
Pardew was an appalling manager. He was an appalling appointment, and anyone who's involved with it is accountable just as much as he is. But he couldn't have done that job any worse. He couldn't have. You hear tales, and I've heard it too often not to be to a certain extent true, of the players not being prepared for games. Certainly from what you looked at, it didn't appear that way. You hear tales of the sort of individual that he is. Don't know whether or not that happened at Albion, but there's a lot of talk around Taxigate and so on. The dealing of Taxigate, don't think it's a massive issue, but he didn't deal with it very well. I don't think Alan Pardew did one thing well in all the time he came here, and it's the most. I said on Twitter in the week, if I had to list the three things the three most stupid things Albion done in all the time I've been an Albion fan, recruiting Tony Pardew.
Recruiting, God, I'm having nightmares and stuff.
Recruiting Alan Pardew would be number one. Keeping Alan Pardew would be number two, and not sacking him for very long. For long after would be number three. It was an abortion of a decision. He was an abortion of a manager, and he relegated Albion.
God, this is.
Alan, you have Alan Pardew fourth on your list.
So yeah, I've taken more of a. I've got him third. I've taken more of a kind of top down view of it. I think the people, ultimately the decision makers, are the likes of Alan Pardew and Tony Pulis, when it comes to tactics and it comes to team selections and blah blah. That's all well and good, and they can be criticised for whatever. In that particular department, but ultimately whether they're there or not belongs to the decision above them.
Yeah,
so it might be a bit boring, you know, it might be something that a fan might not take as much interest in as what's on the field. When you're a football fan, you want to turn up every Saturday afternoon and watch your team play 90 minutes, but week by week the decisions are being made around the club or in a boardroom, and you know, it stems back to I've got John Williams of mine good, but it stems back to giving Tony Pulis a new deal.
Yeah.
In the summer.
Why do you think that was so telling?
For the second season in a row, they've tailed off really quite badly as well. You know, they I think they took 2 points from 9 games. I don't think it was any more than that. But it was quite clear that both seasons, the season before they did 9 games as well, that wasn't a wake up call then. I don't know what is. You look at Burnley this season, they've kept going and going and going, they've got no interest in slowing down.
Yeah,
they want 7th place, they want Europe. Sean Dyche is a very very likeable bloke, but he's also quite clearly a very very good man manager. And while I'm saying he isn't a bad man manager, he's clearly a good manager because of his reputation, his career would dictate that. His race had been run, and the decision to give him another year only to then sack him in November and pay him off however much it would have been, it was just catastrophic. And I know we weren't in the bottom three when he got sacked, and the season could have still been salvaged, but therein lies another decision as well, to appoint Alan Pardew.
Well, while we're on Pardew, so I haven't prepared you for this, but we're going to have an impromptu quiz now.
Okay.
And you have to answer these questions, yes or no, within 3 seconds of me asking it. You have a maximum 3 seconds to wait.
Oh.
So what I'm asking you now is, Alan Pardew had 19 games this season.
Yep.
You take Alan Pardew in, and you bring in the person I'm about to name, yes or no, would they have kept Albin up? Okay?
Right.
So, those 19 games, Darren Moore.
Yes.
Anthony Pulis.
No.
Thora Hurd.
Going by humans now. No.
Joe Chapman.
Do I fancy my chances?
Yes.
I do.
Football editor Matt Kendrick.
No, he'd have been an undercover villain.
Someone who's never seen any football matches before.
I think they'd have given it a good go.
Steve Clark.
Yes, without question.
Chris Wilder.
Yes.
Harry Redknapp.
Yes.
Okay, well, I think that's interesting.
Thora Hurd.
I contest that practically anyone on earth would have kept them.
No, well, I take your point, but
you've dealt with Williams Goodman. That I'd agree. I mean, fundamentally, Williams Goodman recruited Pardew. They bit the bullet for that, and rightly so. And so they have a big involvement. That's why they're number two for me. I think they were.
It was just a very struck me as quite a lazy appointment. It was like Alan Pardew, one of the more, I suppose he was most eligible. Free agent, wasn't he?
Yeah, but that was stupid in its own right. I've made this point before.
You've got to go and get the Romain man.
That's on loan.
Yeah.
That we're paying £20 million for across a season, or something like that. You know, maybe 15 million. But, you know, if you take the money that they're spending on Krakowiak and Sturridge, they're spending an absolute fortune on these players who almost never play. Meanwhile, the manager is absolutely over everything. They took the cheapest option. It was appalling. And the thing,
yeah, absolutely.
I think if I had to rank the things they did wrong. Recruiting Alan Pardew is top. As I say, recruiting Alan Pardew is top of the stupidest things I've ever known in any sphere. But quite
Palace and Newcastle supporters were very, very clear in warning Albion fans on social media when the day Pardew was appointed.
It was a lazy, cheap appointment.
We hope for that bounce. That's all I can say is, and I said at the time, we hope for that bounce. The Alan Pardew has had that bounce at Newcastle, the bounce at Crystal Palace. Please just deliver us that, and it never arrived. And of course, he blamed Gary Megson for that.
What I was going to say is the second reason, and reason why probably actually you make a good point about why they're top. I mean, Alan Pardew will always be top for me, but Albion now have the best paid poor squad in the country, in the world, in fact, because England is the home for
it's one hell of a salary.
There's no question about it, realistically. They're the 8th best paid team, and yet they are the 19th best team in the country. And realistically, they've got worse players. I know they're 20th, sorry. They've got worse players than Stoke, Southampton, maybe not Swansea. But I mean, there's some players in that team that are paid a ridiculously small amount. And the reason being, I think, is kind of a wider structure. I mean, you bring Hammond into that as well. Pulis had this kind of control over the players. They weren't moving players around enough. They weren't dealing with the ageing squad quick enough. So they were paying players, like poor players, because that's an alternative to actually recruiting, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah, take your point, absolutely.
So forgive me, there might be some background noise, but we'll continue to plough on. So I've got Lai in third place. I mean, I think Lai is a bit as above, really. Lai is accountable for the things that William and Goodman did. All I would say about Lai is, and I take this to the grave, the biggest loss that Albion have had is Jeremy Peake. I think Jeremy Peake is a really underrated part of the Albion story. I think there's a lot of accounts. I think Dan Ashworth today did a terrific job. There's no question about that. And there's others, Roy Hodgson and so on, that have been a big part of it. But the fundamental the creating an organisation which knew what it was doing, which had a plan, which was more dynamic than its rivals. I think we did that for a long time. The example I always point to is sacking Roberto Di Matteo to bring in Roy Hodgson to seize on that moment, that sort of thing. Albion stopped being a proactive organisation when Peake left. I don't think Lai is active at all in terms of how Albion are run.
No.
I don't think it's a big part of it, but I suppose if we are dishing out blame, we lost what was a very, very, very good chairman and gained an absent one, I would guess. So you can get anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, you look at kind of our nearest and dearest neighbours, and Wolves owner is very hands on.
Yep.
Villa owner, very hands on. You've got an Albion owner that turns up only when the big boys are in town. And, you know, he kind of throws you a gesture here and there, throw you a free scarf or a pint or whatever. But really, you know, he's kind of almost, he's arrived at the club, he's made some appointments at the board level, and he said, right, guys, get on with it.
Well, if I had to say, sorry to cut you across, what's one idea that Albion have had as a squad, since they've come? What have they tried? What have they done? You know, what have they kind of become about? You know, so an idea like, so Albion obviously had a tangible idea one time under Peace that was pay less in transfer fees and pay more in wages. I don't know if that might be an outmoded notion now, but at the time it worked. Have they ever come up with an idea since then? This new regime doesn't have ideas.
No, it's scattergun.
It's like run a team. Well, okay, so put a chairman in and then off you go.
I was very much on the kind of bandwagon in the summer that I classed it as a very, very successful transfer window on paper.
Yeah.
I've since been proven extremely wrong.
As have we all, really.
But you can understand why we got excited, you know, on paper, and I'll reiterate that. We signed a winger from the Bundesliga for 15 million quid.
Yep.
We signed a Premier League winner in central midfield. We signed a player from Paris Saint-Germain on loan. Who else do we bring in? I'm not including Zhang in this.
No.
We signed Kieran Gibbs, very, very capable Premier League defender.
We kept Johnny Evans.
We kept Johnny Evans, which was enormous at the time, looking back.
Yeah.
The way you know, the big boys were queuing up for him. Jay Rodriguez has proven to be a very, very decent signing. But I mean, other than that, you're struggling, aren't you? When you look back, we signed a lot of midfielders. Didn't sign another out and out centre forward. Rodriguez has played very well as number 10, but we didn't sign another centre forward.
Yeah, we remain a striker. Like, funny enough,
until the 30th of January, anyway, when we signed Daniel Sturridge.
I put a tweet out before. One of the first responses was, you know, Pulis is number 1 for me because it was the most horribly imbalanced squad that I've ever seen. Do you agree with that? I mean, I think we're a striker like the squad, and I think our wide players are too similar.
I agree.
But I mean, I actually think in defence they haven't dealt with the age problem, and actually they've covered it. You know, we have a plan A and a plan B at full back.
We don't have enough pace throughout the squad. We've got nothing. We're seriously lacking in creativity midfield. Gareth Barry and Claudio Jakob, when they played together against Southampton?
Yes.
I know that was down to injuries, but that really, really kind of, you know, showcase the problems in
the
terms
imbalance
of immobility.
It's players who play together well, isn't it? You know, like that. And like I say, I think if you look at our wide players, they're sort of all the same, really. They're all running straight lines and so on. So I get that. Well, let's come on to players. So I've put players. Where's players in your list of blame?
I've got players at 5. I've got Pardew at 3 and Pulis at 4.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So players are 4 for me, and I mean, the truth is, it's a big kind of homogenous group.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me about players like Evans, Livermore, and Barry, I blame them. If you were to ask me about players like McLean, Noyum, and Rondon, I don't blame them. Why? Well, I have greater expectations on the like of Evans, Livermore, and Barry. When Barry came in, Barry's an example.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to be. He's going to be a good player. I thought he was going to be a better player than Darren Fletcher.
For the first 3 or 4 months, he was.
Do you actually think that?
I think alongside Krikoviak and, was it, Krikoviak playing midfield?
They always struggle to make Krikoviak, Livermore, and Barry work. That's
yes,
the case.
Yeah. But I thought Barry, for the first 2 or 3 months at least, was the pick of the three.
No, I sort of felt like we were trying to convince ourselves of that, really. If I had to say the pick of the
three, maybe he's just the best of a bad bunch. Maybe.
If I had to say the pick of the three now, and I'd have said it then, I'd say Krikoviak. And I think, you know, I don't think he played well. I just think I never felt really felt Barry.
Krikoviak showed glimpses and nothing more. And when there were glimpses, you thought, wow, he's a real player. But
they've let us down. I mean, there's no question Evans and Barry have let us down. Livermore, I think, is an interesting one, actually. I think you were saying earlier on, I mean, Livermore's been terrific under Darren Moore, but does that really just expose what he wasn't before?
And he's got a World Cup to get to and a potential Premier League club move
to
get in the summer. And okay, maybe that has just coincided with Moore overseeing proceedings, but undoubtedly he has, you know. Dare I say, he's added goals to his game as well.
Yeah.
So even if it was a combined total of 5 yards out from which he scored the 2 goals.
But how much money do you reckon he's added to his value? I reckon Livermore might have added 5 million to his value in the last couple of
years. I think that even in the space of 18 months that we've had him, I think the transfer market's just gone mad.
Yeah, so do I.
And
what do you reckon for him? He's Livermore, a 15 to 20 million pound player.
Absolutely. Isn't it? 15 million quid for Jay Livermore for an England international.
Yeah.
Stoke want 40 million for Jack Butland.
Yes, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? If we're not holding out for 15, 20 million for someone like Livermore, then it'd be scandalous.
So fifth on my list is Mark Jenkins. Have you said he's second on yours?
Yes, he's second on mine. I think that was the key thing about coming back straight into the club and not getting rid of Pardew earlier.
Yeah.
And it's quite clear that Pardew, much like Pulis, was just someone that needed to get out of the club by the end.
Yeah.
And I think...
Hefty accountability, this though.
Well, it is. But I'm trying to think. I've got to get my dates right now because I think that Huddersfield game when we lost at home to Huddersfield.
Yeah.
He should have gone then.
Well, at the latest, he should have gone then. Yes.
In fact, even the Chelsea game the week before when we were beaten and on the Monday night,
I'd have been
ahead of the Huddersfield game.
I'd be giving a run for a new manager to that Huddersfield game minimum.
Because then you think. And then the Huddersfield game, you lose that. That's got to be the last straw.
Yeah.
To then go and give him Bournemouth, Watford, Leicester, Burnley. Moore probably would have taken 6-7 points from those games. And we'd be sitting where, you know, kind of 15th now.
It seemed fairly evident to me that it was a financial decision that they didn't want to give Pardew a big payoff in a season that had already written off. The fact that they wrote off the season so early and the fact that you've had someone like Darren Moore come in and not written it off now is an embarrassment to the board and Jenkins, and that they should recognise it. But I would contest why Jenkins isn't high for me is that he wasn't there at the start. He didn't recruit Pardew, he didn't sack Pulis, he's not that accountable for the structure, and indeed, I mean, I know he was there when they ripped up the structure for Pulis, but I mean, fundamentally, it's not a Jenkins piece kind of a structure. So it's kind of lower down for me,
I get that.
He should have sat. There's no question.
It's a title, isn't it?
And Huddersfield, I think every Albion fan points to it. I'd say Huddersfield was the last moment you should have sat.
That was when I honestly thought, how on earth can you stay on here?
And history says, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but history shows it realistically. Oh, well, here's quiz B.
Go on then.
Would Darren Moore have saved Albion if you gave it him after Huddersfield?
I think so. I mean, I'm not going to suggest he's going to go the rest of the season unbeaten, but I think he'd have overseen a spell in charge where it's obviously going to be extended compared to the one that he's overseeing now, i.e. 6 games. If you said to him, actually, here you go, you've got 16 games, or whatever it was, then I think, okay, relatively speaking, it might not have been as impressive as what he's done now, but... I think I think they'd have got to, what were they on then? They were on about 20 points, weren't they?
And I mean, if you think about, you know,
can't tell me he would have got 16-17 points from the remaining games.
You've had Huddersfield at home, Southampton at home, and Swansea at home, which we took 1 point from them.
And the away games though, mate, as well.
But I mean, they're 9 points, and I think anyone other than Alan Pardew,
we lost them all away as well.
Would have took points from them. Yeah, exactly. So six for me, this is going to be controversial, but number six on my list is Tony Pulis. I mean, unquestionably, Pulis had an involvement in this. They were 17th when he went. He was taking the club in the wrong direction. It wasn't a happy club. These players that were under Pardew to a large extent were underperforming under Pulis to a certain extent. He hadn't got that balance right in midfield. He wasn't, you know, Krakowiak was going nowhere with us. He'd upset Chadley, obviously, that kind of going the wrong direction. Another thing about Pulis I would throw in is that he destabilised the whole recruitment part of it. The reason why Hammond isn't higher for me, because Hammond would be accountable for recruitment, not for the fact that he's not really, because Pardew took it away, Pulis took it away from him. So I think Pulis has been a big part of why we got relegated, but I'm never one that feels the need to be popular. It's almost like now, it's a measure of how much of a football fan, Albion fan you are, how much you blame Pulis for everything. Well, I don't. And I don't actually... I think some of these, you know, these national commentators who glibly say, well, yeah, second Tony Pulis took you down, are more right than a lot of Albion fans are in truth. Don't get me wrong, Pulis is going in the wrong direction. I think all, there's some big question marks about how much his heart was really in Albin and so on, but I retain the view that he wouldn't have taken a genius to keep Albin up, and I have the view that Pulis would have kept Albin up.
I'm just basing this on form. You say that Tony Pulis oversaw a run of, okay, spanning two seasons, Tony Pulis oversaw a run of two wins in 21.
Yeah.
If you were at that Chelsea, if you were at the Huddersfield game the week before in the away end where they took 3,000 or whatever, and they were like just berating him for an entire half as he set up with a kind of a 5-4-1 formation at Huddersfield away, then the week before, the week after, when they were spanked by Chelsea, I'm really struggling to see where it was going to get better. Where was he going to get, what were they on about? They were going to need about 20-25 points from that position that they were in. Where were they going to come from for the remaining 25 games?
Yeah, but history said that.
I know, absolutely.
But it's not even that. I mean, this is not to say that I would advocate Pulis at the end of the season. And I said this at the time. What I wouldn't advocate is sacking him and replacing him with someone who's ill-prepared for it. What I am an advocate of is Pulis needed to be moved out of the club, and he probably couldn't have got to the end of the season with him. But they should have sat with him until the right candidate came along. That's what should have happened. And dare I say, you know, if it was a Sam Allardyce, and that's fine, because he's someone who's got a track record of keeping teams up. If it was a manager from abroad that was exceptional, the next Mauricio Pochettino, then fine, give that a go. I'm not sure the squad would have been right for it, but that's fine. If it was, Chris Wilder or something, if they had a plan, that's
yes,
fine.
Yes, but that's the thing. They were afraid to buy out when
but
they
did. You can't blame Pulis for who replaced him. And the truth is, you sack a manager when you have a better alternative than ever. And as I've already made it abundantly clear, Alan Pardew isn't a better alternative to any manager.
No. Well, I quite agree. And as I've already kind of touched on, it was just almost a lazy appointment just to kind of give it to the bloke who was a free agent, who had Premier League experience, blah, blah, blah. Same mould as Pulis in that respect. He's managed a few Premier League clubs. And, can you just keep this squad up, please? And it was just never going to work.
Actually, I should have mentioned this before, actually. The worst thing that Williams and Goodman did aligned with recruiting Pardew. It was a catastrophic thing to say that we're ruling out anyone who's not managed in the Premier League. You know, it was to say we're recruiting a manager and we want to be absolutely certain that they're a failure, basically. You know, it was a really, really daft thing to say.
Yeah. Because look at Darren Moore now.
Look at
never managed in the Premier League.
I mean, Mark Hughes is just about going to scrape up with Southampton.
Paul Lambert was an awful appointment.
Exactly. And what this season shows is, if you're a chairman who thinks it's a really good idea to recruit someone because they've relegated someone else from that division, then you're a moron. You know, if I were to go out now and recruit a reporter that doesn't know how to write, I'd go and find one that doesn't know how to write, but that's not actually what I want. I want someone who understands, you know, English and that kind of thing. Well, they went and they basically said that our archetype is someone who has failed in the past. Well, then that's what they got. Congratulations. You brought in a manager that didn't win any games in Crystal Palace. And guess what? He didn't win any games with Albion either. Well, well done. You know,
it's a shame, because for a lot of people at Crystal Palace, it would have been, he's not going to get another Premier League job now, is he? The West Bromwich Albion come along, give him that job. Yeah. And only now would the national consensus be, well, Alan Pardew isn't getting a Premier League job.
No.
But it's taken his time at West Brom, a catastrophic and very, very costly tenure at West Brom, to realise that.
So unfortunately we've had to prove that. So next in my list is Nicky Hammond. Where have you got him in yours?
Adam 6.
Yeah, 7 for me. I mean, for me, the thing about Hammond is
there are a lot of other people fingers pointing, you know, other than Nicky Hammond.
I think the question I'd ask about Hammond is, what was he for? You know, if you've got a technical director that doesn't have any involvement in recruitment and while Peter's there, what did he do? What was it for?
Brought Hal Robson Carney in.
Yeah. Well, how do we get it? Well, I mean, did he bring Hal Robson Carney in? I'm not sure.
Well, I'm going really by not even so much the Reading thing. It was more Tony Pulis is quite clearly not happy with Hal Robson Carney as a sign.
Yeah.
And so, well, if he's not Pulis' signing, he had to be Hammond signing.
I think to come back to your earlier point about accountability, it struck me. I mean, he was a director and hence he's accountable. I mean, fundamentally, I just don't know what he was for. I think he came to let Pulis decide everything. I'm not. If he was involved post Pulis, it didn't work. I credit Albion with the roll of the dice. Story didn't work. They brought down a surgery because they recognised that everything, that things were failing, and I would say that's kind of fair enough. And I mean, you're right. I mean, I'm the same as you. After the summer, I was happy. After January, I was happy.
The Ali G signing is.
It was always an irrelevance pointless. That. But I was happy. I was happy both times. But I don't think actually you'd actually necessarily credit Hammond with either, because I don't think he had his hand on the tiller about transfers essentially.
No.
So finally, fans. Yes. Yeah, so I brought this up on Twitter, and someone pointed out the fans were to blame, and I can understand what they're saying. And I thought, and I'm, you know, again, no desire to be popular. I think that the
good job.
I think that the pressure that you alluded to earlier on about Pulis. Is the fans right? I'd never ever criticise a fan for, you know, following a Tony Pulis team that, you know, watching 50 away games in a row, none of which we ever tried to win. They were right, it's not fair, and so on. But it was a pressure that was brought to bear on a board that was ill prepared for that pressure. And fundamentally, they didn't sack Pulis at the right time. They should have sacked him earlier because the right manager came
along. Yeah, that's what I said.
Or later because the right manager came
along. They should have parted company with him, probably. It's so easy in hindsight.
But whenever, if they sacked him in the summer, that's fine. If they sacked him next summer, that's fine. If they sacked him the day after they sacked him, that's fine. But if they did it because the right manager came along, then that's the reason. You know, it's funny how these things come and go. I mean, a few weeks ago you said, "Well, Carlos Carvajal was the right manager," and it turns out that's not right. And it's not easy. But the fans had a part to play in Pulis going. And while it's not for a fan to strategically boo because you're not trying to win away at Huddersfield, it brought pressure on the club to sack the manager at the time, which was Goodmans and Williams' fault, really, at a time when they didn't replace him right. And I just wonder, and I don't know, but I just wonder if what Jeremy Pearce would have done is soaked up that pressure while he found the right person to take Albion forward. That's the right thing to do. That's not the fans' fault.
Yeah.
Hence, they're bottom of the list. It ain't the fans' fault. And to be honest, I was pretty fed up with watching Tony Pulis football as well, you know.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting actually on a separate note to see how Middlesbrough get on next season if they do go up, because that's another very, very similar club in terms of stature and a squad that's needs a lot of work to it. Really, I would suggest Middlesbrough got a couple of handy players, but much like under Karanka the last time they were up, you know, they're going to need some additions.
I would take the view, if Pulis gets Middlesbrough up, he will definitely stabilise them in the Premier League. But what I would say is the Pulis at Middlesbrough isn't the same as the Pulis at Albion. And the Dave Kemp thing's interesting, how he's prepared to come.
Well, quite, yeah. I mean, not much has been made of that.
Pulis's heart is in the Middlesbrough job, and it wasn't in the Albion job at the end. So, you know, I am often a type of Pulis apologist. I'm not. I will never, ever, ever agree that Tony Pulis, the issue of Tony Pulis ever outweighs the issue of sacking him and recruiting Pardew. It'll forever be that.
I don't, well, that's kind of why I've got Williams and Goodman at the top of my list, really.
Yeah, no, I think there's some good reason with that. Well, so that's it. I mean, we've assigned blame. It seemed like the right week for it. I can tell you next week that we're going to be looking at player ratings. We're going to be assessing which players, from 1 to 10, how we rate the players. We've got a special guest in for that, but equally we'd like you to get involved, really. So if you want to send in to us your player ratings for the season, ranking the players 1 to 10 for this year, then we will make sure it's part of next week's Woodman Corner. So please do that. You know how to get in touch with us. You can hit us up on Woodman Podcast on Twitter, or find myself, Graham Brown, or Joe Chapman on Twitter. You can email us. We're eminently findable, so do feel free to do that. In the meantime, thank you ever so much for joining us this week. Thank you, Joe, for your debate.
Thank you, Graham, for your quality hosting skills, as always. And, boing boing to all the Albion fans going to Crystal Palace this weekend.
Exactly.
One last hurrah, hopefully.
Yes, hopefully the Darren Moore show continues. So thanks for joining us again this week. We'll see you again next week.